The SF Signal Podcast. What the hell episode are we on? SF Signal. This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And it's 72 degrees, and I am sitting here not in the downstairs, underground, super secret lair of the Functional Nerds, but rather upstairs with the doors and windows open and using the internal mic on the computer. So you might notice a little bit of difference in sound quality. I do apologize for that. But hey, it's a nice day, and I wanted to hang out. You may have noticed that we didn't have an interview last week. That was due to some scheduling conflicts that arose. But we will have an interview this week with Aaron Hoffman. So look forward to that on Thursday. But for today, you're looking for a panel. And I didn't really do a panel. What I did was a voicemail show. And this is because a couple things happened this week. Number one, my brother was visiting. And I kind of had some plans. It was kind of unexpected, so we did some plans last minute, and I wasn't able to record on Wednesday as normal. And number two, my birthday fell this week, so I had like a couple days off that I wanted to spend with family and do some cool things. We went up to the mountains, all that kind of good stuff. So no normal panel today, but I did ask everyone to call in with their voicemails on the topic, and this week's topic is horror novels and authors. Do you like to be scared? From Goosebumps and Spooksville to Weave World and Pet Cemetery, we love to be scared when we read. Or do we? Ooh, Ice Cream Man. I don't know if you guys can hear that or not. Do you personally like to be scared? If you know a book is characterized as horror, will you pick it up? Have you ever picked up a book and enjoyed it without realizing it was a horror novel? And if yes, which books and or authors? And have you ever put a book down or hid it in the freezer, thank you, Joey, because you realized what it was? Horror. If you're a fan of horror, who is your favorite author, and what is your favorite book? These are the questions that I put out to our panelists and asked them to send me in their voicemails. And I did get some responses. Let's go with the first one, Mr. John Ottinger from Grasping for the Wind. Take it away, John.
Patrick asks, horror novels and authors, do we like to be scared? I have to say that I absolutely do not like to be scared. This is John Ottinger with Grasping for the Wind. I have, over the years, read a couple of the horror novels, but at no point did I ever really enjoy them. Now, that's not to say that I don't like a good thrill, but if a novel is classified as horror, I am unlikely to go near it, to touch it, to even look at the cover. It's not so much, to be honest, maybe I fear horror novels. My intent in reading is always to be entertained, and to be entertained in a way that makes me feel good. Horror novels generally do not make me feel good. They I'm sure are enjoyable for some, but for me, when I read them, I'm usually left feeling worse about myself, more pessimistic about the world, and certainly not having the sense of calm that I like to have with a good resolution, or maybe that's too value judgment, with a completed resolution that ends relatively positively. Of course, that doesn't mean I don't enjoy a tragedy. Hamlet is an amazing book, but is a tragedy. So you can, or play, I rather should say, you can certainly enjoy an ending even that does not come off well for the hero slash heroine, but horror novels, books that intentionally set out to scare me, to put me at a sense of complete unease in that way, tend to not make it onto my shelves, never even to make it into my hands. So while I'm not saying that horror as a genre, there's anything wrong with it, for me, there simply is no appeal. And so, unfortunately, I can't recommend any good horror novels, even of the science fiction variety or fantasy variety. So, just want to say thank you for letting me be able to share with you a little bit about why horror novels just don't do it for me.
Thank you, John, for that. And, you know, it never fails. As soon as I decide to sit out here and do a little bit of recording, the ice cream man drives by. And you know, it's kind of – I guess it is sort of fate that he would drive by right now, because we don't really have, like, the normal ice cream man. We have creepy van guy ice cream man, which is right out of a horror novel. It's like this creepy dark van with the windows taped over, you know, with the menu of ice cream. It's really creepy. I would never ever buy ice cream for this guy, nor would I send kids to buy ice cream from it. You know, it'd be like, yeah, go to the scary van guy and get some ice cream. I don't think so. Anyway, thanks again to John Ottinger for that. Now we're going to move on to John DiNardo, resident blogger at SF Signal. Take it away, John.
Hi, folks. John DiNardo, resident blogger at SF Signal here, talking about horror novels. Do I like to read horror? Yes, I do, though I don't read nearly as much of it as I'd like to. I can say that about all books, and I tend to read science fiction more than fantasy and horror, but I do loves me some horror novels. And for some odd reason, and I don't know what it was in my past that made this so, but I kind of have a greater desire to read horror novels in the winter months. You know, the idea of curling up with a good book, it's, you know, when I think of that image, it's usually a horror novel where I'm kind of, you know, holed up and reading and turning the pages and waiting to see what comes next. Do I like to be scared? I don't know that a horror novel has ever scared me the same way that films have. I think maybe I was more impressionable when I was younger watching some horror movies. I think of films like The Omen and The Exorcist that were just beyond creepy. But novels never really had that effect on me. I don't know that I read that many when I was younger anyway. Although I do know someone who woke up with nightmares while he was in the middle of reading the Omen book. But I don't think that's ever happened to me. Or if it did, I blocked it out. But basically, I like any book that elicits a genuine emotional response and gets me invested in the characters and or story. So, you know, I don't have to be scared, but I have to care about the characters or the story. Some favorite books that come to mind when I think about horror include Stephen King's It, which was a very long book, but didn't feel long. Kind of tore through that one, and I thought it was pretty good. Some of Your Blood by Theodore Sturgeon. Sturgeon is, I think, an excellent writer, and to read Some of Your Blood, which is kind of a one-sitting novel, it was just a great reading experience. I read a couple years ago, finally, Necroscope by Brian Lumley, which I thought was excellent. It had kind of like secret government organizations and supernatural abilities and creatures, and felt very epic for the story it told. I've enjoyed Charles Strauss's Laundry Stories, which kind of have a Cthulhu bent. Jeffrey Thomas's Punktown novels are quite fun and mix science fiction with horror elements. There's also some horror elements in some of Alistair Reynolds' stories, even though they're not really overtly horror. There are some horrific things in them. Even more recently, I think David Moody's Hater novels have been really super creepy, and just some of the violence exhibited in those stories is chilling, and that I think is kind of the essence of horror novels is books that can elicit those kind of emotional responses. Anyway, that's me on horror.
Thank you, John. I will note for our listeners that no bagels were harmed in the production of that voicemail. Now we move on to Paul Weimer. Paul did a voicemail for us, and we do appreciate that. Paul, take it away.
Hi, this is Paul Weimer of Blog J Vista Style and Other Places answering the SF Signal podcast question, horror novels and writers, do I like to be scared? Sometimes I do. I generally prefer the tropes of horror as reflected in dark fantasy using those elements to paint a palette of a fantasy novel which isn't shiny, happy, and bright, but sometimes is more muted or dark or sinister tones. But every so often, horror is what we'll do. Why? Horror evokes fear and other emotions which are healthy to express now and then, and it's much safer to express those emotions reading Brian Lumley or Stephen King or watching, say, In the Mouth of Madness than, say, playing Russian roulette with yourself, which will definitely bring out fear and horror, but also might get you dead. I've been reading horror ever since I came across a Choose Your Own Adventure type book back in the 80s called Choose Your Own Horror. And the first book of that line was called Craven House Horrors. And that book scared the crap out of me. I haven't read a tremendous amount of horror since, but every so often it'll wind up in the book pile. Or a novel which is dark fantasy will slide past the boundaries of dark fantasy into out-and-out horror as the author attempts to evoke that fear in me. And as I said before, I think it's an extremely healthy thing to read horror now and again. I wouldn't make it a large part of my reading diet or a primary part of my reading diet, but it's part of the constellation of genre fiction. And I think it's valuable for any genre connoisseur to at least sample the waters and see what's out there. Just like any other variety of sub-branch of genre fiction. Horror is no different. Thank you.
Nice, Paul. Very nice. Thank you. Thanks for calling in. We do appreciate that. Last but certainly not least, I have Carrie Quinn, who called in with her opinions on this. So let's take a listen to Carrie.
This is Carrie Quinn, and I love a good horror novel. A really good horror story, one that's intelligently written by an author who thought about the consequences of his character's actions, those are almost like a guidebook for how to avoid that situation in the future. I mean, if you think about it, what are the chances we're ever going to have a zombie apocalypse? We've all read that story. If it's 5 a.m. and your neighbor is shambling over to your house, moaning, dripping blood, saying something about brains, chances are you're not going to give him a hug, say, "Hey, Bob, why don't you come inside for some coffee?" No, you're going to go inside, you're going to barricade yourself in a room with no windows, and you're going to call the police. And if the police aren't there because there are zombies everywhere, then you're going to get a baseball bat, and you're going to take Bob out, and you're going to run for the hills. Because you've read that story. You know how that ends. Just the same as if you go to your neighbor's for dinner, and he's put out plastic sheeting, and he's sharpening his knives, and you haven't seen his wife for a few days. Yeah, I'd run. That story's not going to end well either. But we know that, because we've read that story. The other great thing about a horror novel isn't just that they're scary, because of course they're scary. That's the point. They usually have something. Not the everyday kind of scary that we grow up with, not the normal kind of terrifying that we know is outside in the dark, but something worse. Something that can't be reasoned with. A monster that you can't talk to, that is just going to chase you down until it gets you. The great thing about one of those stories is, if you know what you're looking for, and if you read that story, after a while it almost becomes like you're rooting for who to live and who to die. And it's vindication. You get to see, oh, you know, the dumb blonde cheerleader who doesn't have any useful skills and has a tendency to walk into empty rooms in the dark, yeah, she's gonna die. But the girl over there with the glasses and all the books that keeps telling people not to split up and trying to call the police, yeah, she's gonna live. Because she's smart and she's thinking about the situation that she's in. And so it's almost like if you read that book and you go through that horror and you have that fear, you're going to get to the end and you're going to know somebody made it. Somebody got through and is able to tell that story. There's a lesson there that you can learn. And it gives you hope. Actually, when things are dark and you read a book like that, at the end, somebody made it. And it actually makes things better. So that's why I love really good horror stories.
And there you have it. Thank you, Carrie. Do appreciate it. You know, I've been remiss a little bit. A while ago, I asked Jessica Strider to do a new author spotlight piece for the podcast, similar to what she does on sfsignal.com, only, you know, obviously recorded. And she has dutifully sent those in each and every month. and I have not been able to use them because the podcasts have been running a little bit longer. Some people like the longer formats and the longer podcasts. Some people don't. I've been trying to keep them at least, 30 minutes as a maximum, and so I don't always have time to add in any of her new author spotlights. So I do apologize to Jessica for that, but so I've got some backlogged, and I want to go ahead and run a couple for you here now. So let's go to the first one, which is Andrew Mayer, who's actually been on the podcast before. So take it away, Jessica.
Hi, this is Jessica Strider from scififanletter.blogspot.com with this month's new author spotlight. If you're a fan of steampunk and liked Soulless by Gail Carriger, Agatha H. in The Airship City by Phil Foglio, or The Dream of Perpetual Motion by Dexter Palmer, then check out Andrew P. Mayer. The dust jacket for his book, The Falling Machine, reads, "In 1880, women aren't allowed to vote, much less dress up in costume and fight crime. But 20-year-old socialite Sarah Stanton still dreams of becoming a hero. Her opportunity arrives in tragedy when the leader of the Society of Paragons, New York's greatest team of gentlemen adventurers, is murdered right before her eyes. To uncover the truth behind the assassination, Sarah joins forces with the amazing mechanical man known as the Automaton. Together, they unmask a conspiracy at the heart of the Paragons that reveals the world of heroes and high society is built on a crumbling foundation of greed and lies. When Sarah comes face to face with the megalomaniacal villain behind the murder, she must discover she has the courage to sacrifice her life of privilege and save her clockwork friend. The Falling Machine takes place in a Victorian New York powered by the discovery of fortified steam, a substance that allows ordinary men to wield extraordinary abilities and grant powers that can corrupt gentlemen of great moral strength. The secret behind this amazing substance is something that wicked brutes will gladly kill for, and one that Sarah must try to protect, no matter what the cost. Thanks for listening."
Thank you for that, Jessica. Here is the second one that I'm going to do this month, because I'm just kind of trying to get a little bit caught up here. And this is on T.C. McCarthy. And this is, again, Jessica Strider. So take it away, Jessica.
Hi, this is Jessica Strider from scififanletter.blogspot.com with this month's new author spotlight. If you're a fan of military SF and liked Embedded by Dan Abnett, Death's Head by David Gunn, or Rebels in Arms by Ben Weaver, then check out T.C. McCarthy. He's written Germline. The dust jacket for Germline reads, "Germline, noun, the genetic material contained in a cellular lineage which can be passed to the next generation. Also, secret military program to develop genetically engineered super soldiers. Slang. War is Oscar Wendell's ticket to greatness. A reporter for the Stars and Stripes, he has the only one-way pass to the front lines of a brutal war over natural resources buried underneath the icy, mineral-rich mountains of Kazakhstan. But war is nothing like he expected. Heavily armored soldiers battle genetically engineered troops hundreds of meters below the surface. The genetics, the germline soldiers, are the key to winning this war, but some inventions can't be undone. Some technologies can't be put back in the box. Kaz will change everything, not least Oscar himself. Hooked on a dangerous cocktail of adrenaline and drugs, Oscar doesn't find the war finds him. Thanks for listening."
There you have it. There's our podcast number something or other. You know what? I'll figure it out later. But that's it for me. It is a gorgeous day, and I've got some grilling to do. But before I leave, I will remind you to visit sfsignal.com each and every day for all your science fiction-y good stuff. Our contributors work really hard to provide content to the website, and you should go check it out. If you're looking for John D. on Twitter or SF Signal, it is at SF Signal, and John D. is there all the time, twittering and tweeting and doing all that kind of good stuff, and giving you links to really cool science fiction stuff from all over the web. So you should definitely check out John D. at SF Signal. If you're looking for me online, I am ATFMB, all things from my brain. That's my blog, atfmb.com. That's my Twitter, Twitter at ATFMB. And that's my Facebook, facebook.com/ATFMB. I'm also on Google Plus, but not as ATFMB, so you'll have to look for me if you want to find me there. Anything else? Yeah, you know, check out the Functional Nerds, because we do cool stuff over there, functionalnerds.com. What else? I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I need to remind you guys about, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Oh, although Batman Arkham City is freaking cool. It's very, very cool, so you should go check that out. Made my brother watch Paranormal Activity. Scared the crap out of him. Yes. That was awesome. Also made him watch Serenity, which he liked. So, there you go. I think that's it for me. I gotta record another thing for the Aaron Hoffman piece. But other than that, I'm out of here. So, I will see you guys next week. I won't really see you. It's like radio.